listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
In this movie and in the trailer, so no spoiler, where Mark Hamill, Skywalker, says, "This is not going to go the way that you expect it's going to." And that's kind of a good general feeling for how I felt about Star Wars The Last Jedi over and over and over again throughout the movie. I'm Chris, of course. Joining me is John Golson.
Hey.
And Ian Butcher.
Hey, everybody.
We will be giving the non-spoiler review. Sometime next week, I'll get together all the super dorks. We've got a team of, like, those people who read all the canon, and they read all the novels and the comics and everything, watch all the cartoon shows, and then we bring them in to go, okay, y'all go.
That's the spoiler review or the non-spoiler? That's the spoiler review.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll let them do the spoiler review, but we're going to be as good as is possible to be with our non-spoiler review of Star Wars The Last Jedi. And I will say that although I'm not 100% on this, I do think it is probably ranking in my top three of the Star Wars films. I don't know how you guys...
Yeah, definitely. It's a movie that, you know, it's been a couple of days since we saw it, and I haven't been able to stop thinking about it, you know, and it's a movie that I'm really looking forward to seeing again. Just because there's so much to unpack, and kind of like what you were saying at the beginning, this is so not the movie I thought I was going to get. Like, I kind of went in, you know, not arms crossed, I was very much looking forward to it, but with the mindset of, okay, it's probably going to be this, just by the nature of what it is. Second movie, everybody, you know, in this story, everybody's kind of expecting it to not be a retread of Empire, but, you know.
I would think to some extent we were expecting a lot of feelings of Empire.
Yeah, have elements of that.
I'm not going to say it doesn't have elements of that, but it also has elements of Return of the Jedi in there and a lot of stuff that is just stuff we've never seen in Star Wars.
And that was the thing that really got me about the movie is the fact that the movie knows that you think that going in. Mm-hmm. And it actively and really brilliantly kind of plays with that, toys with those expectations. And takes the story of this movie and also just the larger story of the whole Skywalker saga to a lot of really interesting and unexpected places.
Yeah, I think that's the best thing about this is that it advances forward, like, the mythology in a much more aggressive way than we've seen any of the films really do for quite some time.
Really since Empire.
Yeah, really since Empire. We're like, wow, this turns the story in multiple different directions than we were expecting, to be sure. And also, some of the biggest complaints about The Force Awakens were things like, well, I don't feel like Poe Dameron just doesn't even seem like a real character. He's just like, hey, I'm Poe Dameron, woo! And here they really give you something to chew on.
You discover that, hey, I'm Poe Dameron is his character. it is that guy.
That's kind of what I love about the movie is it takes those things from The Force Awakens, like Poe Dameron not being the most fleshed out character, and it makes that a plot point. You know, it makes that part of his arc is him growing and him learning to not so much be that guy who's just like, all right, X-Wings, let's, you know, shoot them all down, blow them all up. You know, that he needs to be a little more, you know, tactical, you know, and kind of think not just with his trigger finger.
Yeah, we get to see him actually grow as a person. Yeah. And like a lot of the characters in here being so sure they know how things are going to go. And then they just didn't understand the situation.
Yeah, definitely.
There's always, it's almost like, and Rian Johnson, the director who famously does in fact love con films, there is aspects of that in here where they do everything but do the, like that you do in con films where you go back and rewatch scenes and you're like, oh, we weren't seeing them from the right angle.
There was a point about, you know, during the last about half hour of this movie, during one particular scene where I almost thought they were going to do that.
Right.
You know, I almost thought they were going to go like, well, here's what actually happened, you know, because it was such a huge, like, holy shit moment, you know, witnessing that.
Yeah, it's like, this is the Ocean's 14 in space.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, but you know what I mean.
It has elements of that. And that's the thing about this movie is, you know, on top of just, you know, the plot itself taking a lot of different turns, just, you know, stylistically, this is such a different movie from, you know, any of the other films in the Skywalker saga.
I agree, but I think it does wink at some of those.
Definitely.
Like, you've seen in the trailers the scene with the planet that looks a lot like Hoth, but with weird red stuff. And that's an intentional, almost wink and a nod at the audience for the Hoth scene at the beginning of the Empire.
But I feel like there's like a really smart, with a lot of that stuff, there's a really smart, almost like kind of meta aspect to it, you know? And again, going back to subverting your expectations, like, you know, you'd think, oh, well, second movie, you know, this whole thing with the walkers, it's probably going to be near the beginning of the movie. And it's not.
There was a line in Walter Chaw's review of the film that blew my mind, which is that hope takes seed even in salted earth. And I was like, oh my God. Like, yeah, it never occurred to me either. And I was like, holy shit. Yeah, I was just floored by that. And I was like, how much of that kind of meticulous thought is actually given to the movie?
Yeah.
It's one that almost commands a repeat viewing. And I always end up seeing them multiple times anyways, because they're Star Wars. And it's usually through sheer timing, because they come out at a certain time where I have family that wants to go see them. And I've always seen them with different family members. So I'll go and see them. But this one in particular, I need to rewatch simply because of that issue of expectations. And the movie very deliberately zags when you think it's going to zig. It almost always does it's funny, because this is like the non-spoiler review, and I almost feel reluctant to even say that, because it almost creates an expectation in and of itself. But it is a movie where a lot of times I expected certain things to happen, and it would either delay the gratification of those things or specifically subvert those things and go a different direction.
Right. Like I said, about half the time it completely goes a different way. Another half of the time, it's really just a delaying tactic where it's like, oh, well, ultimately we get to the same place as what you thought was going to happen, mm-hmm. but it went about it completely differently.
Yeah. I don't know that I could ever rank them in that regard, because the three originals are so tied to my childhood that I don't know that I can – there's no way I can ever, like, extricate them from myself and go, like – you know, right. Like, look at them with adult eyes that haven't grown up with them as, like, a huge, huge part of my childhood.
Or even just your feelings in general about these characters.
Like, kind of, like, I something about it, maybe I would rank it third, maybe, but I'd like to see it again. Because The Force Awakens is a very watchable Star Wars movie. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to put on and just rewatch.
Yeah.
You know, it's always got something. It makes a great background movie, because it's always got something. If it's playing, it's always got something kind of interesting going on at any given time. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see it again and kind of find where I place it, because I'm kind of curious too as to how, you know, the first half of it is so, is so deliberate. Almost all the big money moments are saved for sort of a series of one after the other finales that kind of take place at the end.
Right.
That I hope that I'm not bored within the first hour on a rewatch.
Yeah, I can see that. There is, much more so than The Force Awakens, there is a lot of conversation and character development going on here. Yep. A lot of these characters are given a lot more time to mature and grow. Like I mentioned, mm-hmm. Poe Dameron, Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
Is, you know, obviously every scene she's in by definition is bittersweet, but she's given considerably more screen time than the last movie, and much more of an interesting arc here, as is the sort of relationship between that goes on in the plot here between her, Poe, and Laura Dern's characters, introduced as someone who comes in to basically be Leia's, like, you know, number one,
yeah,
if you will,
yeah,
with weird purple hair.
Don't say anything bad about Space Laura Dern, all right?
I'm not. I did like all of that. I think, like, what issues I did have weren't even big issues. They were just, there were the moments that felt a little, I don't know, prequel-y. Like, there's a whole thing where they go to a casino planet that got a little, like, I don't know, went a little past my goofy level for my taste the first time watching through.
Interesting. Because I'm not, you know, I'm not like a prequel guy at all, but I actually liked, it almost felt like almost refreshing, you know, that we had this little, like, glimpse of a prequel style planet, even if it was just for about 5-10 minutes.
Right.
It felt like, you know, it was very different. It was a fun juxtaposition having a movie that has stormtroopers and the Millennium Falcon and TIE fighters, to then suddenly go to a planet that has kind of that sheen. And there's a reason why it has kind of that very, like, almost sterile sheen that the prequels had.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Yeah. It's just jarring, I guess. Mm. Not jar-jarring. Just
hey!
But, and it, like, it has some weird moments in it. Like, Justin Theroux has a weird little cameo.
That was weird,
it,
yeah.
Like, you would have been better off not casting someone we
No, no, no. It, but I think that's on purpose, because I think that you then go, it's, and this, if we're going to let anything be the spoiler, we'll let this be the spoiler, because we're talking about it. But it's very much a case of you're like, if you see somebody recognize, you assume they're going to figure into the story. And then again, the movie zigs when you think it's going to zag, and it's like, oh, it's actually not him. Mm. It's this other guy who we haven't shown you yet.
It is interesting, I thought, that Rian Johnson is intentionally trying to play cleanup for stuff that a lot of people had problems with The Force Awakens. I didn't. I actually really like The Force Awakens.
Yeah, same.
I get some of the complaints, but I'm like, well, those things just don't really bother me very much. Mm. But like things like dealing with some of the side characters that don't really come to much in there, kind of like, okay, get out of here. We don't need
anything.
You know, some of these characters, especially on the Imperial side that were introduced, that you're like, why are they even here? And doing really much more interesting things with Adam Driver's character and with Daisy Ridley's character. I think they have like a force cell phone system that is actually used to really good effect here in sort of advancing the relationship of these characters to the Force and to each other and to everything that's going on around them.
And that's kind of the most fascinating thing about this movie is that the relationship between those two characters and how it develops and the way that they're both their journeys kind of parallel each other, but also differ from one another. And that's where, at least for me, a lot of the tension for the movie came from was, because it was taking so many, you know, left turns and zigzags and all that, I was genuinely on kind of pins and needles at a lot of points because I didn't know, like, you were kind of meeting both of these characters at very much kind of crossroads in their own personal journeys. And I didn't know for most of the movie where one character was going to end up on the spectrum, where another character was going to end up on the spectrum. And it was really one of the most fascinating things about the movie was to see kind of very interesting ways that their journeys kind of play out and evolve and where they're left at the end of this movie.
Yeah, agreed. Where they're, what it all comes to, their relationship is definitely one of the more interesting WTF things about this movie. Where you're just like, wow, I can't believe that shit just happened.
Yeah, yeah. And it really, like, you know, not to, you know, jump too far ahead, but it does, walking out of this movie, I was really kind of curious and fascinated about, like, what the hell is episode 9 going to be? Because this movie ends in a very interesting place, you know, as far as where these characters are at, where you go, like, I both have a good sense and I have no idea where this story is going simultaneously.
Especially considering that after this, like I said, it kept subverting your expectations over and over again throughout it, in a lot of different ways. I felt like John Boyega kind of got short shrifted a little bit.
A little bit.
But like they use him sort of to play opposite a new character in here that, Kelly Marie Tran plays, who is just coincidentally basically runs into Finn and they end up going on a mission together, and so they sort of just pair them off to do their own thing for a while in the movie. It serves to introduce Benicio del Toro's character, who I actually thought was great. I hope that they use him in like some of the other, like, even if it's just a side canon, whatever it is, because I'm like, he's like, I don't know. He's one of those, like, he's like a rogue. He's no Han Solo, but he's no Boba Fett either.
Yeah, he does exist in a really interesting kind of middle ground. And I just liked all the really, like, weird little tics that, you know, were, like, Benicio's ideas and no one else that he brought to the character.
Yeah, they definitely felt that way. It's like, hand me the fucking lightsaber, motherfucker. I hope there's an outtake where he says
that. Oh, you know it's going to exist somewhere.
I really hope that it does. It's funny how many famous people are in this that I did not spot.
Well, there's people on this list. We're looking at this, and there's people in there that are not in the movie. Like, Unkar Plutt is not in the movie. It says he reprises his role. He's straight up not in there.
Unless he's in a background shot somewhere that I missed.
Yeah.
And things like, they said Noah Segan was in this somewhere.
I would assume that Segan and Warwick Davis are in the casino.
Noah Segan, he's at the, towards the beginning of the movie, in like kind of the background, one of the shots, he's one of the extra
pilots
walking by.
Well, let's not forget Prince Harry and Tom Hardy were both stormtroopers.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you'd be able to spot him.
Oh, I spotted him right away, of course.
Yeah. I know the way Prince Harry walks.
Yeah. My expectations going into this were established strictly by the toy aisle. which were, no, I'm dead serious. Yeah. And that's the fact that this movie, I had the suspicion something's up because the toy aisle isn't filled with new characters. And everybody kind of looks the same. Like, Ray has a navy blue outfit instead of a brown one. Yeah. But other than that, it was sort of like, okay, we have this black droid, and that's it. Like, you still have, it's still Finn, and it's still Ray, and it's, you know, you have old Luke, who you saw in the first one. So you have, like, all these characters. There wasn't this influx of merchandise that included crazy aliens and ships I've never seen and playsets for planets I've never heard of. And the toy aisle had me the most curious about what the shape of this was going to be, because I was like, it's really strange for a Star Wars film to launch and not have that toy aisle presence. Yeah. And this is the first one that didn't.
It felt like maybe there was a discussion going in the past that was, that has acted as too big of a spoiler, and there's stuff in here we just don't want people to know about.
Well, in retrospect, they launched a new Star Wars toy line in the fall, and I have to think that that was almost like a preemptive, well, we know we're not going to sell a lot of Last Jedi toys, so we'll do this other toy line, because they've got this whole thing where it's like dolls of the female characters that have like different accessories and fashions and all that kind of stuff. It's chasing like the DC superhero girls crowd with Star Wars. And so they rolled that out in the fall. And I think that they did that again to kind of go, we still need our income, but we recognize that to stay true to the vision of the filmmaker, it's not necessarily filled to the brim with all kinds of things that we can make toys out of.
I mean, I feel like, especially in the casino scenes, there's so much going on. There are, like the way there were in the original Star Wars film and the cantina, but they're all like just kind of flashing by real fast.
Yeah, real
fast.
The camera's
moving so quickly, you can never quite settle in on one alien.
Eventually, they'll release this movie's version of the Hammerhead action figure, you know, where it's like, okay, well, that was the thing. I remember that guy. I like the little weird dwarf, like greedy guy, like if the character, the guy from Monopoly,
putting
was
coins,
was like a dwarf from another galaxy. That's what he would look like. Some weird shit in there. What was I gonna say? Blah 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 blah. Supreme Leader Snoke, I thought, was like dealt with exactly in the way they should have, that it never would have occurred to me to do. But
yeah. Well, that's the thing that kind of interested me about his character, and it's kind of systemic about a lot of what happens in this movie, where I feel like Rian Johnson and a bunch of the Lucasfilm people were probably for the last 2 years, like just reading all the fan theories and how like fervent some people were getting about certain characters or certain events, you know, and just laughing.
Yeah. There's a lot of like almost like the movie just giving a middle finger.
Yeah. To fan theories. but I definitely, Snoke was definitely one of those characters that I was kind of curious to see what they were going to do with him, because you know, the way he's set up in The Force Awakens is he's essentially, you know, your new emperor. And I liked what early on, kind of what Andy Serkis was doing, this like almost Hugh Hefner-esque, like kind of swagger the character has. But I thought it was kind of odd that the movie was still kind of keeping Snoke at arm's length. But I thought that was one of the genius things about the movie, is later on, you know, what kind of where they go with his character was such a brilliant, like, oh, okay, I see what you're doing there. Okay.
And as well as that, I love the way this movie turned is this movie's redheaded stepchild.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's like they use him almost for like comic relief villain.
Oh yeah, you know? He's like a literal rag doll at points. Yeah. You
know? It's very funny. And this movie is very funny.
Like surprisingly so. Yeah.
There's a lot of laugh out loud moments here with humor, much like the plot points, that often catches you very much off guard.
Yeah. Yeah. And it definitely kind of helps balance sort of the very, you know, thematically very heavy parts, especially in the middle and towards the end, you know, kind of the darker places that this movie goes. It does make for a nice balance and keeps the movie fun and light and kind of entertaining.
I've heard some complaints already that the humor is too anachronistic, that it feels very much like of today. But I don't know. I think in looking back, I'd rather it feel of today than feel like some broad vaudeville stuff that's in the prequels.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, like what does 3PO say in the conveyor belt scene in Attack of the Clones? Yeah, there's like he fell apart or some stupid throwaway line like that, or like, you know, or like the Bantha Poodoo stuff from episode one. I'd rather it feel modern than feel dusty.
It's time for it to feel modern, quite frankly. It's not anachronistic in the sense that, like, they're referencing the Shaft movies or something, you know, out of nowhere. It's not like, it's not referential.
Yeah.
It's just, there's a distinctly different feel to the humor in this film than what we've seen before,
there's,
for sure.
There's a voice.
It, like, call it modern so much as just, like, stuff that's funny today, the style of humor that works today, because why would you try to do jokes that don't work anymore?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, I feel like you can very much feel Rian Johnson's voice throughout this entire movie. You know, in the humor, in kind of the con Absolutely. Movie elements of it. And in just a lot of, like, you know, he's a director who very much loves, you know, kind of old Hollywood. And you can kind of see that in certain parts. Like, there's a whole sequence early on in this movie that felt straight out of, like, a, you know, a World War II bomber movie. You know, just from the way it was staged and composed. And there's a lot of that. You know, the way that a lot of the action is set is very much, you know, just, we're just going to kind of let the action play out and get out of the way.
Yeah, and there's no shortage of when they want to do that scenes.
It's really cool. It's really cool.
Unlike anything you've really totally seen before.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a lot of, I mean, and as well, people were worried. Okay, I'll just say, you were worried about the cuteness factor. We've all seen the Porgs. We're all like, what are those things? Are they going to be the new Ewoks? Honestly, they're like such a, they're almost like a little side joke, and they're like, they are kind of cute in their way, but the movie also kind of gives you something if you automatically hate them as well. that's quite funny. And no, they're not, they're, at no point did I find them annoying.
Yeah, and that was definitely a big worry I had going in. Was, you know, is this going to be, you know, the Ewoks or Jar Jar or that type of, you know, very overly kiddie element in this movie. And, yeah, they're used a little bit early on and then just kind of very sparingly throughout the movie just to have a joke here and there.
They're there to annoy Chewbacca more than
anything. I've been giving people grief about the Porgs simply because I always think it's funny when people go deep on merchandise before the movie's released, because I always think back to my days working at KB Toys and all those damn Episode One toys that people were just like, oh, do you have Boss Nass and stuff like that? It's like, you know, they hadn't seen square one of the film, but they were just so ready. And so all the Porg mania I've been really, really skeptical about, but I won't begrudge anybody their Porgs. They are literally an animal that lives on the planet with Luke, and that's it. They're not Ewoks.
They're not like evolved creatures.
Yeah.
I much more, in terms of cuteness, really dug these like sort of sentient racehorse things they have here.
Yeah,
almost kind of Miyazaki-ish in a weird sort of way. I was like, oh, they're so cute. It's like a cross between a horse and a puppy.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of the cool thing about it is a lot of the creatures, other than the Porgs, and you know, a lot of the creatures that you haven't seen yet in the marketing, you know, do look very new and very interesting.
Well, he also makes them soulful, which is weird. Like, even Force Awakens, which has, like, the big hippo thing and, like, some other animals, they feel literally like animals. Mm-hmm. There's something about both the Porgs and the kind of, like, weird long-necked racehorsey things, where even though you only get, like, a really good look at that racehorse thing in one shot, it looks at the camera and it looks at the characters with such an intelligence in its eyes that it makes you wonder, wait, is this like a sentient alien being that these people are riding? And that's kind of consistent in the Porgs as well, which is like you get a sense, just a sense, not like it's not well established, but you get a sense that they're more than just flat out birds because they can express emotion on their face and things like that.
Right.
And I don't know if that again aligns to like Rian Johnson's vision of animals. I have no idea, but it feels evident.
Yeah. I mean, like they're like, there's some awareness of what's going on around them to be sure. And you can't help but use it for some sort of emotional thing when their eyes are that fucking big. You're like, oh, that's what they're for.
Yeah.
They're for to sort of mirror what the other characters are feeling or whatever, you know? And you never get the feeling like they're going to end up having a seat on the Council of the Republic or anything, you know?
That's one thing we actually haven't really got a chance to talk about a lot is Mark Hamill, who I thought, like, knocked out of the park, frankly, in this. He was, like, shockingly really great.
It's a very unexpected performance.
Yeah.
From Hamill and just for the character of Luke Skywalker, the arc they chose to go with this character, I completely understand now why Hamill was very resistant when he read this script.
Yeah.
Was, like, kind of almost seemed openly mad about it. And you're like, okay, I get it. I get why you're upset. But I think in terms of advancing this mythology and the fact that so much time has passed since we've seen you, and this all seemed perfectly plausible to me to have happened this way and for him to have become the man that he has.
Yeah, and it finds a way to just add new dimension to a character that we've, you know, known about and, you know, followed on adventures for 30 plus years.
Yeah.
You know, and it gives Hamill, you know, something completely different to play.
Oh, yeah.
You know, than, you know, just the typical kind of hero's journey or playing it as, you know, the wise old mentor.
He also gets one of the best, like, badass moments.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. You're just like, because at first you're like, he's just a cranky old guy. He's like, get out of my yard, kids. And then yeah, they definitely give you what you were hoping for.
Yeah.
And then had no idea that that was what you were hoping for.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. And then again, it goes back to that, like, spoilery, non-spoiler thing of, like, you assume, okay, I know movies well enough to know that that's over and done with and we're moving on and mm-hmm. we're following the plot. And then it's like, oh, I was completely wrong, which is what happens over and over and over. You just kind of wash your hands of certain scenes and go, all right, we're moving on from this because I know movies and I'm smart. And then it's like, oh, no, I was dumb about that. I thought this was going to be different. And then, you know, but in a good way, like I'm glad that I was wrong. The Mark Hamill thing in particular, I think I started off, it took me a while to kind of chew on his performance in regards to his, he's playing very much into who he is now versus what I think of in my head when I think of Luke Skywalker from the original trilogy.
Yeah.
There's a lot more Mark Hamill persona on the screen. He's wryly sarcastic in the way that he comes across regularly in interviews and things like that.
Yeah.
His voice has been tempered by age and probably tobacco to kind of have that, like, he kind of talks like this now. Like,
yeah, he's done waiting a bit.
Yeah. And so there was a part of me that for a little while, for longer than I wanted, I was like, this doesn't feel like Luke to me. And I get that he's in a different place in his life, but it wasn't even just that. It was a performance thing where I'm like, this just doesn't, it does not feel to me like this is the same character. I would say that somewhere around redacted moment that started to melt away because it felt like it was melting away from the character himself.
Like, and it was an intentional choice.
Like, and then it sort of was like, and then going towards, again, as Luke becomes, I'm trying to think of how to word this without stepping all over spoilers, as Luke becomes more intrinsic to furthering the actual plot of the film, he became more and more Luke-like.
Yes. Agreed. I mean, that in and of itself putting them
skipping through the minefield.
Walking over those mines.
The movie putting him in such a non Luke Skywalker type place to start with is so that his character has an interesting arc.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it would just be exactly what you expect from Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
You know, they find a very interesting way to make that put him in such a different situation. And as well, that knowledge that he has deeply impacting, like, everything else that is going on in the movie, you know, especially with the other Force users, where it's like, oh, well, that changes the picture of everything else that we know, you know?
It's easy to look at I almost said Chewbacca. It's easy to look like at a character like Chewbacca from the original trilogy and believe that he's the same Chewbacca in Last Jedi. It's easy to see, like, in Han Solo is the same way, Leia is the same way. It's easy to look at their faces and go, that's the same Princess Leia that I saw in Return and Empire. And again, talking about subverting expectations, you know, the wise sage version of Luke versus, like, the farm boy, and thank God for, like, expanded universe stuff, because there's still a story to be told about sort of, like, I feel like I want to know more about how his life shaped him to this point, because to me, he feels like a person who's fundamentally different than he was at the end of Jedi.
Yeah, it definitely feels like there are other stories to be told there.
And they do tell the story, you know, they tell the story of Kylo Ren, and that's no spoiler because that's already established in the first film, and that's thoroughly explored here, but it really does feel like a person who has gone through some stuff where, you know, God, it's so hard for me to talk about.
We're just dodging around them.
Yeah.
We're trying to be careful for you guys.
So when there is a reminder of his old self, it brought that stuff, I think, into sharp focus, not just for the character, but for me as an audience member too, kind of going like, yeah, I want to know, this is the first Star Wars film where it's like, I want to know more psychological things about the characters. I want to know more underlying things. I want to know more emotional things. Like, a lot of times we get lost in the minutia of plot and lore and mythology of like, and then this governing body did this, and so the Resistance did this, and or we're talking about Jedis, and we're going, well, if you read the books, there was an ancient Jedi who hid these books in a tree, and da 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 da. It's like, we get focused on all that kind of stuff, but this is the first one where I'm like, I want to know what is Rey thinking right now.
Yeah.
I want to know, like, as this film ends, like, what are Kylo Ren's thoughts at exactly this moment? You know, there's a lot of stuff that I'm left thinking about. And for a Star Wars movie that's so unexpected to walk away from wanting, like, feeling that these are, yeah, they're characters and they've always been characters, but George Lucas has always dealt in text, so people just say whatever they're thinking or feeling.
Right.
And in this, it's like people don't necessarily share all that right on the surface, and sometimes it takes a lot to pull it out of them in the case of, like, a Luke or a Kylo Ren. And so there's something kind of more real about these new films in that regard. They feel more like real humans and less like movie characters in that way.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I do think this is the first of the Star Wars films to really treat these as, like, these written characters as actual people and how people behave.
Yeah.
As opposed to pieces moving around in the plot.
Yeah.
You know, I think in some ways, some people are going to call this the best of the Star Wars film for that very reason, I think.
And some people are going to hate it for that reason.
Yeah, some people are.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Definitely. I'm just waiting. I know there'll be at least one. I know, like, the guy I was most worried about, my friend, you know, Chepo Pena?
No.
You know Chepo? He's, like, the biggest Star Wars dork I know, period. End of story. And he came out and he was shaking. And I was like, and I couldn't tell. Was that mean? Is he angry? Is he happy? He's like, I'm just so happy. I can't even process my feelings right now. I'm like, okay, good. Because I really enjoyed that too. why don't we go into final thoughts, John? Why don't you go start it up?
Well, on that note, there's some people that don't like their expectations toyed with. Straight up, period. Sure. Don't, they want, if they're sitting down, they want to see certain things and they have in their head, this is what I want to see. And if you don't give them that, especially immediately, they can sour on a film and turn on a film real fast. And I think that might make this, and we'll see Friday. I have a feeling this might be one of the most divisive Star Wars films. But if you watch a lot of movies and you see a lot of things, it's always great to be surprised. And Last Jedi had more surprises, than I expected.
Yeah. With the reviews, we do what we call the arbitrary ratings, which can be anything that just has to be like, you know, 2 out of 5, space laser guns or 9 out of 10, you know, Millennium Falcon turrets or whatever, you know. I forgot this is your first highly suspect.
Yes. Movie, so. I'm going to be very arbitrary with this number. I'll give it an 8 out of 9. See, I'm not even going to go 10. An 8 out of 9 freshly roasted porgs.
There you go. There you go. Ian, what about you?
It's funny. You talking about kind of how Chepo responded to the movie. That's very much how I felt, you know, when the movie was over, where I couldn't get out of my seat when the credits rolled, because I went in so expecting one thing and I was so delighted to get something that was so completely different. And by the time the movie was over, and just kind of like the, you know, crazy emotional journey that you go on watching that movie, especially, you know, for somebody who, you know, Star Wars, that's, you know, my favorite fictional universe, you know, that's like, you know, grew up on all that. Getting to the end of this movie, I was genuinely just like shaking, and I just had this grin on my face that I couldn't wipe away for the rest of the day. And cause I just could not stop thinking about this movie and the fact that it does, you know, more so than any other movie since Empire, like, there's such huge seismic shifts in just how this story is going to go, you know, is going to play out going forward. And yeah, from everything from, you know, the performances, the writing on this, we didn't really talk about the cinematography in this is amazing.
There is a shot in the movie towards the end where, I shouldn't have said towards the end. Let me just rephrase this.
I have.
They capture the light in Mark Hamill's eyes in a way that refracts off of the lens on his freaking cornea.
Yeah.
And it makes his eyes almost look like they're glowing.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not to mention just the whole battle on the salt desert.
Oh my God.
Just gorgeous. Like, oh my God, that's so beautiful. I'll even say some people were bitching about the crystal foxes. I thought they were really cool.
Okay? Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's a, they even served a purpose.
They serve a purpose bigger than the forest do.
And yeah, that's the thing. You know, there's a lot of people who are going to go into this, you know, like I think all of us, you know, going in with the Empire comparison. And at least for me, this movie reminded me less of Empire and what it meant to its trilogy. And it reminded me more of The Dark Knight, honestly, and more of what it meant to that specific trilogy. As far as, you know, just kind of the pacing of the momentum of it, where it takes those characters, the fact that it gets into a lot of, like, really heavy thematic, you know, material, with characters who up to that point had been, you know, comic book characters in that mm-hmm. sense, but makes them real grounded humans. And so, yeah, so with this, you know, I've only seen it the once, you know, maybe I'm being hyperbolic, or maybe I'll like it less the next time I see it, or maybe I'll love it more, but honestly, I'm just going to have to go with my gut and give it 10 out of 10, lightsabers to the eye.
This is exactly the shot in the arm that the third part of the Skywalker trilogy needed to become memorable and important in the context of all three of the trilogies. Like, where people will talk about it in more of the context that they talked about the middle trilogy or the first trilogy, if you will. It's has to shake things up, and it does it in a way that never feels but at the end, oh, that never would have happened that way. You know, it's like, oh, I guess it just, at some points, was making more sense than a Star Wars movie usually does.
Yeah.
and I can see what, as John said, that might feel troublesome to some people. It's not, this one is the first one that's not just purely space fantasy. You know, it's got more going on here, and to great effect. And I think Rian Johnson is, it makes me sad that we're going back to J.J. Abrams.
It kind of does, right?
I like Force Awakens, but it's just all surface. This is so much more than that, and I'm hoping that the rumors are true that Johnson's deeply involved with writing the script for this new one. I kind of wish that they would just go, you know, we're just going to let Johnson do it, we change our mind, but then again, he is the guy in charge of developing the whole new trilogy.
Which is so cool.
I'm like, after this, I'm like, okay, it's fine, whatever.
Well, and that's the thing about, you know, JJ coming back to 9. I am curious to see kind of how he's, you know, in response to Last Jedi, how he's going to approach that material. But at the very least, for all the people who are saying, oh, he's just going to remake Return of the Jedi, he can't. No. He literally cannot with where this movie goes.
If anything, Force Awakens is the Return of the Jedi of this series so far. And in terms of quality, I suspect in the end, this will be the Empire, and maybe the next one will be like, not as good as this one, but still better than the first one.
I'll take it.
But, that's at least I can hope for with Abrams returning to the chair personally. But I thoroughly enjoyed this. I really can't wait to see it again, because I think there is, as you started the review, there's so much to unpack here. There's so much to think about. There's so much I need to, having seen the whole thing, go back and watch again, now knowing everything that I do about it, all the surprises and the reveals. I'm going to give this 9.5 out of 10 thermoses full of weird space walrus green milk. And there's a moment you can just feel everyone in the audience pull back like, oh no, don't do that. Oh God. You know, Luke used to be sucking off a bantha's teat, getting that blue milk back in the day. He's like, what? It's a different color.
Well, I think what makes that moment is just that weird shit-eating grin he gives of just like, yeah.
And the walrus looking strangely satisfied.
I had a friend who was like trying to troll Star Wars fans. He's like, I couldn't believe the amount of nipples in the new Star Wars. And I was like, brother, you don't even know. Like, you are 100% correct.